he thought. Something for oblivion. He rolled up the sleeve of his uniform and pressed the syringe to the bare skin of his forearm. Heard his gentle, soothing, reptilian hiss. He looked up and saw that the wall screen was displaying a view from the surface of Vesta. A sliver of bare rock, and then the black emptiness of infinity. Stars upon stars, all silent and grave, staring back at him. A barren wilderness of cold and dark. The drug started to take effect quickly. Harbin lay back on his bed, thinking, "Oh, wilderness, were paradise now." He closed his eyes and begged the silent stars to keep him from dreaming.
Cellini, Earthview Restaurant. Levi Levinson had never seen such a luxurious restaurant, except in videos. The main eating establishment of Hotel Luna, the Earthview, was three levels deep beneath the floor of the crater Alphonsus, big enough to hold 100 tables covered with heavy damask tablecloths and glittering with silver tableware and sparkling wine glasses and lit by real, actual, flickering candles. The spacious room buzzed softly with muted conversations and the barest hint of elegant classical music purring from the overhead speakers. Real, live waiters moved among the tables wearing formal evening clothes. Levinson never gave a thought to the fact that he was wearing his usual coveralls. He had nothing better in his meager wardrobe. Nor did he realize that most of the restaurant's tables were empty. His eyes went to the wide holoscreens mounted on the walls, each showing a real-time view of Earth, glowing blue and white against the endless blackness of space as it hung in the sky above Alphonsus's ringwall mountains. He was more than a quarter hour early for his appointment with Victoria Farrar, so the table that the maitre d' led him to was empty. He sat ogling the well-dressed tourists and executives at the few other occupied tables, while a waiter poured water for him and left a wine list on the table. Levinson was satisfied with the water. He really wanted a beer, but he felt too self-conscious to ask for one. After so many weeks in Cellini, living in an apartment provided by Astro Corporation, Levinson felt a little guilty about accepting an invitation to dine with an executive from the rival Humphrey Space Systems. But what the hell, he thought. I'm not an Astro employee, and Pancho Lane has just totally ignored me since she brought me here. It's like she wants me out of the way, hidden like some witness against a crime syndicate back on Earth. I've got nothing better to do until the Journal of Nanotechnology publishes my paper. And even there, they've been dragging their feet, like they don't really want to publish it. Those were the thoughts tumbling through his mind when Victoria Farrar came up to his table and said, "You're Dr. Levinson? I'm Vicky Farrar." Something in the back of his mind told Levinson he should get to his feet. That's the polite thing. But all he could do was gape at this splendidly beautiful woman standing before him. Farrar wore a dress of some gold metallic stuff that gleamed in the candlelight and clung to her enticingly. The waiter held her chair as she sat down, smiling at Levinson. He felt breathless. Dinner was like some romantic dream. Vicky did the ordering while Levinson simply stared at her, entranced. As they worked their way through the several courses, each accompanied by a special wine, Levinson found himself telling her the story of his life. It sounded plain and dull and boring to him, but she seemed vitally interested in every word. "And you actually have programmed nanos to process the ores from asteroids?" she asked, her wide brown eyes gleaming with respect. Maybe even fascination, he thought. He went into details about it, but inevitably ended with the disappointing information that the rock rats refused to use his process because they considered it too dangerous. "It's not really dangerous," Levinson insisted. "I mean, it could be, but I could work out procedures for them that would bring the risk down to a manageable level." "I'm sure you could," said Vicky, reaching for the sauterne that had been served with dessert. "But they're not interested in it. Levinson said unhappily. Aren't they? No. She leaned slightly closer to him. Then why has Pancho Lane ordered her people at Ceres to go ahead with nanoprocessing? Levinson blinked at her. She what? Astro Corporation is preparing to use nanomachines to mine asteroids. But that's my work. I published it. I mean, I've got it to the journal, and I'm sure Astro will pay you a royalty of some sort, Farrar said. Probably a pittance, just to avoid a lawsuit. Levinson felt as if someone had stabbed him in the heart. Farrar reached across the table and touched his hand. Lev, how would you like to work for Humphrey's Space Systems? How would you like to be in charge of a whole operation out in the belt? Me? You. You're the man we want, Lev. You'll be in charge of nanoprocessing operations at the salary level of a senior executive. He didn't even bother to ask how much money that meant. He knew it was astronomically more than a laboratory scientist made. I'd be very grateful if you said yes, Lev, Victoria Farrar told him, her voice a whisper, her eyes lowered shyly. He nodded dumbly. She smiled her warmest at him. Levinson walked on air all the way back to his quarters with Vicky at his side. She allowed him to give her a fumbling peck on the lips, then left him standing there in the corridor, slightly drunk with wine, more intoxicated with thoughts of being in charge of a major corporate operation, and maybe even having this beautiful woman fall in love with him. He watched her walk down the corridor, then turned to his door and fumbled with the electronic combination lock. Finally stumbling into his apartment, he told himself, "This was just our first date. It went pretty damn well. I think she really likes me."
Victoria Farrar rode the powered stairs down to her own quarters, a quiet smile of accomplishment playing across her lips. "We've got him," she said to herself. "Martin will be pleased."
Cellini, Factory Number 11. Douglas Stavanger's youthful face was frowning with a mixture of anger and dread as he paced slowly down the length of the factory. Like most lunar manufacturing facilities, Factory 11 was built out on the surface, open and exposed to the vacuum, protected against the constant rain of micrometeoroids by only a thin dome of honeycomb metal. "Not much to see, actually," said the factory manager, waving a gloved hand toward the vats where microscopic nanomachines were constructing spacecraft hulls of pure diamond, built atom by atom from the carbon soot mined out of asteroids. Stavanger was wearing one of the new so-called soft suits of nanomachined fabric rather than the cumbersome spacesuit of hard-shelled surmet that the factory director wore. The soft suit was almost like a pair of kiddie pajamas, even down to the attached boots. It was easy to pull on and seal up. The nanomachines held almost normal air pressure inside the suit without ballooning the way older fabric suits did when exposed to vacuum. Even the gloves felt comfortable, easily flexed. A transparent fishbowl helmet completed the rig, with a small air recycler and even smaller communications unit packed into the belt that went around Stavanger's waist. "How's the suit feel?" the factory director asked. Her voice sounded a bit uneasy, edgy in Stavanger's earplug. "Fine," he said. "I'll bet I could do handsprings in it." The woman immediately said, "I wouldn't advise that, sir." Stavanger laughed. "Please call me Doug. Everybody does." "Yes, sir. Doug. My name's Rhonda." Stavanger knew her name and her complete dossier. Although he had not held an official position in Cellini's government for decades, Doug Stavanger still kept a steady finger on the Lunar Nation's pulse. He had the advantage of prestige and the even bigger advantage of freedom. He could go anywhere, see anything, influence anyone. And he did, although usually only in the subtlest manner. But the time for subtlety was ending quickly. He had asked for this tour of Cellini's newest factory because it had been built